you know that some people on TikTok might say that the Cincinnati Reds offense brings the boom. Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome into another episode of First Pitch, your daily source of baseball talk here on the Inside Baseball Network. I am your host, Troy Brock. You can follow me on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. He is Drew Crabtree. You can follow him on the Twitter machine at Drew Crabtree 12. And it is Cincinnati Reds Day. We're going to talk about the Cincinnati Reds a little bit later today, as it is Tuesday, and every Tuesday is Cincinnati Reds Day. So get ready for some Cincinnati Reds talk today. We're going to get to that. We're going to talk about the games from yesterday, and we're going to look at the games that we have on pace today a little bit later. So if you're watching on YouTube, thank you for watching. Leave a subscription. Hit that notification button so you can be notified when another episode just like this goes live. If you're listening on audio, give us a five-star rating. Share the show with your friends. Tell them where they can get their daily source of baseball talk. Send them to firstpitchpodcast.com. Make sure you check out the First Pitch newsletter. Today's issue talked about Tristan McKenzie being DFA'd from the Cleveland Guardians yesterday, and I don't think he's quite done yet at the major league level, so give that a look. Link for the newsletter is in the description of the video. It is free to subscribe and get that bad boy in your email inbox every single weekday, though we do appreciate any and all paid subscribers as it helps keep the bills on around here. How you doing, Big Boom Drew Crabtree?
I do hate that you referenced that. I'm doing all right, you know? I need to pack because I'm flying out to DC tomorrow, and I have not done anything, so I need to do that at some point.
Yes, a quick programming note, and I meant to bring this up yesterday and throughout the week. There will be no episode of the First Pitch Podcast on Friday, as Drew and I will both be out of town. I believe, Drew, you're going to be here tomorrow, yes?
Correct. I'll still be here tomorrow morning.
Okay, Drew will still be with me tomorrow morning. Thursday, I'll be riding solo for the Phillies pod. So get ready for a good little rant, especially after last night's ball game. But it is going to be a fun week, and we are going to talk some baseball while we are here. And we had a small slate of games last night, only 8 games, and you know, most of them were pretty fun. Some of them were pretty close, and some of them, you know, the manager cost the team the win, as that certain manager in question normally does. And the first game of the day was the White Sox and the Red Sox. And, you know, I completely forgot that the reason why the Boston Red Sox game yesterday was so early is because it was Boston Marathon Day. So that explains entirely why they had a day game on a Monday. And the Red Sox did win on Boston Marathon Day. They won 4-2. They are now 13-11, while the White Sox fall to 5-17. Bueller got the win. He's 3-1 with a 4.23 ERA. But tell y'all, don't give up on Bueller, and he's bringing that ERA back on down. Guardians hosted the Yankees, and the Guardians won 6-4. They moved to 13-9. Yankees fall to 14-9. Gavin Williams got the win. Clark Schmidt got the loss. Padres at the Tigers. Tigers won 6-4. Tigers are now 14-9. Padres fall to 16-7. Reds at the Marlins. Marlins take that one 6-3 in the series opener there. Max Mayer had a fantastic outing. He's now 2-2 with a 2.10 ERA. He struck out 14. It was the highest strikeout total in Major League Baseball this year. It was career high for him as well. Nick Lodolo got the loss, not something you've seen a lot this year. He's now 2-2 with a 2.79 ERA. Reds fall to 11-12. Marlins fall or move to 10-12. Drew, thoughts on that game?
Max Meyer was on it. Like, he was pitching possessed. You can give him as much props as you want. That was a fantastic pitching performance by him. He had everything going for him. His breaking stuff was just disgusting. It was honestly worth an entire, if you know, Pitching Ninja had an entire hour worth of talking about a game, this one would have been worth it. Nick Lodolo did not come back super strong from, you know, being a dad, and he just didn't have it. It was super unfortunate. Alexis Diaz, I think it's time. I will say that there was a dumb decision there because his, like they were talking about it on the broadcast, he was throwing a slider and his, you know, thumb sliding up the ball and nicking his finger and he's bleeding. Like dude's got a split finger and you left him in and he gave up a 3-run shot. And then like the next batter was a ground rule double that just bounced over the wall. I would have taken him out, but it is what it is. Can't score 24 every game, unfortunately. Maybe they can do that tonight.
Yeah, maybe they can indeed. And we'll talk about tonight's game a little bit later on in the show. Phillies at the Mets. This one was also a good game, excuse me, though the outcome was not great. The Mets won that one 5-4 in their first contest against a real opponent this year. And you know, they moved to 16-7. The Phillies fall to 13-10. And I'm going to give my thoughts on this game now because while it's still fresh, it really sucks that at the end of the sixth inning, I knew 100% what was going to happen in the bottom of the seventh because of just how easy it is to understand Rob Thompson and how much he just does not know what the hell he's doing. Because at the end of the sixth inning, Aaron Nola had only given up 2 runs. They both came on solo home runs in the first inning and second inning, leading off both innings. He was fantastic. It was his best outing of the season so far. I tweeted as he got the final out, he needs to be done after the sixth. I knew better. Because I've watched Rob Thompson manage ball games, whereas most other people who like to claim that Rob Thompson is a good manager because the Phillies won 95 games last year, they don't have a freaking clue. I had to stop myself because they don't know what the hell they're talking about. But Rob Thompson, his MO is leaving a pitcher in for the seventh just because until they get 2 runners on base. There was nobody even warming in the top of the seventh. Nobody. There was no movement in the bullpen in the top of the seventh. Nobody started warming until Aaron Nola threw 2 balls to the first batter he faced in the bottom of the seventh. That batter reached. The next batter reached to put runners on first and second with no outs. That's when Rob Thompson went to the bullpen because that's what Rob Thompson does. It's not about who he brought in. I could not care less who he brought in that situation. It was not going to end well because you're bringing in a mother freaking reliever with two runners on base and no outs. What the hell do you expect? It's stupid. It is absolutely freaking stupid. It makes no baseball sense whatsoever. And that's his MO. That's what he does every single time. It ruined a great start from Aaron Nola. And if he would have given even Jose Ruiz, who was one of the worst pitchers in the bullpen, if he would have given Jose Ruiz a clean inning in the seventh, the Mets probably would not have scored. The Phillies scored 4 runs in the ninth. The Phillies would have won that ballgame. 100%. I don't care what anyone else says. I don't care about any Mets fan. I don't care about any Yankees fan who don't even know what the hell they're talking about because they ain't even a part of this. Rob Thompson lost that game last night. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. If you got a problem with it, you can go on somewhere because it's the truth. You don't know what the hell you're talking about if you think otherwise. Rob Thompson is a garbage ass manager and he deserves to be fired. I don't care if he won. I don't care if the team won 95 games last year. They lost their last game of the year. 95 wins don't mean crap. If you lose your last game of the season, nobody cares. You could win 162 games. You can go 162-0 in the regular season. You lose your last game of the year, don't mean shit because the manager is trash. And it is his fault that the team has not won a World Series to this point. The roster can only take this team so far. It is being held back by Rob Thompson because he is absolute garbage. And if you think otherwise, you should probably watch a different sport because you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And that's all I've got to say about that. Cardinals at the Braves. Braves won that one 7-6. They had a 5-run comeback in the eighth inning. Good win there by the Braves, though they did allow 3 runs in the ninth. Cardinals tried to come back. They did not. But the Braves helped the Reds out a little bit with their 7-6 victory over the Cardinals. And the Braves have now won 4 in a row. They went from not winning any games consecutively to now winning 4 in a row, including a sweep over the Twins. They did get some bad news. Spencer Strider hit the injured list yesterday. which they just cannot catch a break on that front. But it is a hamstring strain. He's going to be there for 15 days at least on the IL. We'll see what happens in a couple of weeks. Blue Jays at the Braves moved to 9-13. Cardinals fall to 9-14. Blue Jays at the Astros. Astros won 7-0. Astros are now 500, 11-11. Blue Jays are 12-11. Hunter Brown is in the midst of a 24-inning scoreless streak. He is now 3-1 with a 1.16 ERA. Kevin Gausman, Reds legend, got the loss in that one. He is 2-2 with a 3.16 ERA. Brewers at the Giants closed out the night. Giants got the win in that one 5-2. They are now 15-8. Brewers fall to 12-11. Reds getting some more help in that game there. And Hayden Birdsong, of all people, is 1-0 with a 1.38 ERA. And Camilo Duvall, again, of all people, got his third save of the year. But yeah, it's that was the slate of games yesterday. Any final thoughts, Drusif?
Thank you, Giants. That was scoring a run in the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th inning. That'll win you a lot of ball games. It was a small slate, but I think there was a lot of good baseball to be played. To your point about the managers, managers don't win games, but they can lose games. Thank you, David Bell. The Reds were bereft of talent, and I'm definitely not saying the last few years have been solely David Bell's fault, but there were games that the Reds snatched defeat from the jaws of victory because of some of the things that he decided to do. But you know, he's gone, so I've moved past it, thankfully.
Yeah, it's been a somewhat decent year for the Reds this year, and you know, the lineup has done well at times, and you've gotten contributions from guys in the lineup who, frankly, I did not expect you to get contributions in the lineup from. Now, granted, it has been in a small sample size of the last week, but Austin Hayes has done very well since coming off the injured list this year.
He really has. Turns out that if you have a kidney infection that ends up spreading to your brain and screwing all things up, it kind of messes with your ability to play baseball. And now that he's fully healthy, he's playing like he did back in 23 when he was an all-star for the Orioles, in six games. I don't think Baseball Reference is even updated. In six games, he has a 0.6 war. He is on pace for 14 more. That's obviously not going to happen, because that's some serious MVP level stuff. But no, yeah, Austin Hayes has been fantastic. All he does is get on base right now. He got 12 hits in his first 30 plate appearances. He got 12 hits in his, with two walks, so 12 for 28. He's been fantastic. And even last night in the field, he made himself a wonderful play. He saved what I think to be, it would have been a two-run double at the very least, by making a spectacular play on a fly ball right there in left field. I'm loving what I'm seeing from Austin Hayes to this point. The Reds needed an outfield bat this offseason. And then obviously when they signed Austin Hayes, everybody was like, "Woo, bargain bin stuff. Let's go." But he's been, in this short stretch, he's been the Reds' best hitter. Outside of, Noel V. Marte and Austin Wins putting together 13 hits by themselves last night or two nights ago. And then Noel V. Marte getting two hits last night. No, I love what I'm seeing from Austin Hayes. He'll eventually cool off, but I don't think this is going to be a Lynn Sanity run. I don't think this is going to be like a Reese Hines run. I think he's going to be a really solid player for the Reds the remaining, for the rest of the season. And I love that, because if you have somebody that is actually threatening a pitcher behind Ellie De La Cruz, and someone threatening the pitcher before Ellie De La Cruz in Matt McClain, who is also a 0.6 WAR player right now in just 14 games, they have to pitch to Ellie. And if you pitch to Ellie, then, you know, once he's really actually heating up, he's a dangerous player. But no, in general, yes, the lineup seems to be pretty boom or bust. You know, last night, 14 strikeouts. They didn't strike out when the bullpen was in there, but Max Mayer, 14 strikeouts is ridiculous. I'm not too super worried right now because the lineup has been doing well. In the between the last two series, they've amassed over at least 10 hits in most of the games. Obviously, they hit 25 in that massive game, but you know, I'm really excited for what this Reds lineup is starting to heat up. I don't think that it's going to be sustainable for the next 140 games, but you know, if they can continue to average 8-9 hits a game, give or take, like they did last night, even while striking out 14 times and stranding a few on the base paths, I think they'll be all right. You know, they got two more with Miami, and then they got three with Colorado. They come home to face the Cardinals. They got a lot of ground to make up, or even just to win, since the NL Central is so winnable. I'm kind of rambling a little bit.
No, it's fine. Generally, excuse me, as you said, your team, the Reds, recorded 8 hits last night. They scored 3 runs, and generally with the way that their pitching staff has performed this year, that's good enough for a win. And so if they can do that, score 3 or 4 runs a game consistently, you know, they're going to be doing pretty well this season. And I think we kind of touched on it last week, and I want to touch on it again here because, you know, we kind of saw it again a couple days ago, and you touched on it there when you were talking about the offense, is the boom or bust that this team has shown so far this season. So far this season, there have been 3 instances where the team has scored 10 or more runs. They scored 14 in the fourth game of the year, first game against the Rangers. They scored 11 against the Brewers in that weekend after the 14 against the Rangers. And then on Sunday, they scored 24 against the Orioles. And, you know, for those keeping track at home, that's a total of 49 runs scored across those 3 games, which is 16 and a third runs a game on average across those 3 games. But on the season as a whole, the team has scored 120 runs, which is tied for third in Major League Baseball with the Arizona Diamondbacks. That includes those 49 runs. If you take out those 49 runs, they've scored 71 runs across their other 20 games, which is a little more than 3 runs a game on average. It's about 3.5 runs a game on average. So it has been a boom, and while it's not a complete bust with what the pitching staff has been able to do, it's been a boom or bust season to this point for the Cincinnati Reds through, you know, the first 23 games of the year. Does that worry you at all for the rest of the season?
I think, you know, baseball, 162 games. Every team is going to go through stretches where they look like world beaters, and then there are going to be stretches where you're wondering, how did these players even get to a major league roster? You know, through the first couple of weeks, yes, I was definitely worried because the offensive output after that 14-run game was 0-0-0-2. And then after scoring 7 and then 2 again, 11, and then they scored 2, and then they scored 2 and 1. There, before this little stretch, I was pretty concerned because it was seeming like it was way too much bust and not enough boom. After that extra inning loss to the Giants, where they should have won, they should have gotten that sweep, but shoulda, coulda, woulda, they swept the Pirates, which is exactly what you're supposed to do. 5 runs, 5 runs, 4 runs. And then they play well against the Mariners. 8 runs, then 3 runs and a loss, 7 runs and a loss. And then obviously you got the Orioles series last week. I'm not super concerned yet. There are concerning elements, but when you look back to that really, really cold period, they didn't have Austin Hayes. They didn't have Matt McClain. They didn't have arguably their two best hitters. And Jamer Candelaria was getting every day at bats. He's been sat down the last 2 days because he's been booty. Like, he's been awful this year. That has been a Mike Moustakas level contract that they have royally messed up. Unless, of course, he catches fire in May like he normally does, and they can get a couple wins out of him and then ship him off when June hits, just for the fun of it. Jake Fraley has started to heat up. Jose Trevino has been an awesome signing, oddly enough. You wouldn't expect Jose Trevino to be one of those guys that you just think, when Tyler Stevenson comes back, where's he going? That kind of thing. Obviously, Jose Trevino has been a good defensive catcher, but his presence at the plate hasn't been quite what it's supposed to be as a major league catcher. He's been so good that they've been talking, fans, pundits, you know, podcasters alike have been saying, maybe they should move him up in the lineup. Like, this is a catcher that, you know, nowadays the catcher is seems to be the weakest link in the lineup now. But the boomer bust aspect is annoying, but I will say that I'm not super concerned just yet because of the fact that they got Matt McClain back and they have Austin Hayes back. Now, if they can get everybody humming, like Christian Encarnacion Strand, who has not been good at the plate thus far this year, or Spencer Steer, for that matter, then it could be one of the better lineups that you can find in baseball. But there's a whole lot of ifs going on. And, you know, ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. And that's just not how baseball works. You're not going to have all nine guys humming at the exact same time. Because if you do, I mean, sure, you'll get a 24-run outing last night or two nights ago because it was awesome. That was so much fun. That's not going to happen again. They'll score 10 runs again this season. Every team is going to score 10 runs. The Rockies will probably run into 10 runs at least one point this year. Now, I am optimistic on what this lineup can do. I don't anticipate too many bad outings from Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo like they just had. So 3 runs should have been enough. It just happened that Max Meyer was just on his stuff last night, and then they ended up coming back against the bullpen. But no, I love what Matt McClain is bringing. I love what Austin Hayes is bringing. And the fact that Austin wins, you know, that 1-6-hit game notwithstanding has been pretty decent off the bench as the number two catcher. I'm really liking what the lineup is doing right now. The strikeouts were annoying, but I honestly don't get bothered as much about strikeouts as some people do. It's like, Ellie strikes out too much. I'm like, I do not care. He's a ridiculous defender, and he makes up for it half the time at the plate anyway. But yeah, the boomer bust it's annoying, but it's not concerning to me just yet.
Yeah, for sure. It makes sense, especially when, you know, like we pointed out earlier, they are still scoring 3.5 runs a game otherwise, and their pitching staff has been pretty good this season. Through all 23 games, the pitching staff has allowed a total of 91 runs. Of course, only 78 of those have been earned, but it has been a total of 91 runs to the 120 that the offense has scored. And if you take out, as we did with the offense, if you take out the 3 games completely on both sides where the Reds scored double-digit runs and 24 runs and whatnot, then the pitching staff has allowed 79 runs in 20 games, which is, you know, right under 4 runs a game. And with the offense that the Reds has, if your pitching staff can hold a team to 4 runs or less, they have a pretty good chance of winning. And you know, it's going to be a better season for Cincinnati than a lot of people thought heading into the season. I don't remember. I know that before the season we had the Reds finishing third in the division, but I think that I could be wrong, but I think that I did say, hey, don't fully sleep on the Reds because of their offense. And I wasn't sold on this pitching staff, but you know, through the first eighth of the season, the pitching staff has had me come around. I was sold on Hunter Green, but it was the rest of the pitching staff that I wasn't really sold on because, you know, I didn't expect Nick Lodolo to be a 1A to Hunter Green 1. And, you know, it has been, despite the record, it's been a good season so far for the Cincinnati Reds. And I could 100% see them finishing the year with a better record than they had last year. And last year they finished at 77-85. I could realistically see the Cincinnati Reds finishing the year at 81-81 or better. Am I out of line with that?
You're asking the wrong person. I am absolutely on base. I'm on board with that. The thing is with this year versus last year, starting 11-11, starting 11-12, that's a banner year right now with how poorly they started the season under David Bell all these years. Like, let me pull it up. They started off, you know, at the end of April of last year, they were 16-14. Vibes were high. It was awesome. They won 9 games in May. They went 9-18 in the month of May last year. David Bell's squads were notoriously slow out of the gate, just like how the Bengals are. And it's super annoying. I don't understand it. I think the players are just distracted by all the wonderful tropical weather in Cincinnati, Ohio, that they just don't get their mind right or something like that. I don't know. But getting off to a decent start is going to be huge because last year the Reds played 500 baseball outside of the month of May. It was the most frustrating thing, even with David Bell. 2022, they started literally 3-18 in the month of April. They were Colorado Rockies bad. They were worse than Colorado at that point. I think that they can, at the very least, hover around 500 right now. I think that their ceiling, I think, is like 90 wins just for the simple fact that they've got the talent and they can catch fire. That's the fun thing about young teams is like when they're feeling it, they're feeling it. And also the fact that they play in a crappy division and they play every team in baseball, which means they're going to, you know, they've got the Marlins now. They've got the Rockies next. They've got the Cardinals in a 4-game series after that. Last year, I think they swept the Cardinals in a 4-game set, and it was glorious. It would be nice if they do the same thing this year. You're right on base. I think that the Reds, the NL Central is only going to have one team in the playoffs, so the wild card is out of the picture, honestly, unfortunately. But I think that they can at least show up in those standings this year. It would be surprising if anyone other than the Cubs win to me. You know, obviously I'm going to root for their downfall, root for the Reds to win it all. But I do see them as contending for a spot. I don't know if they're quite there yet. Now, if they wake up and they're like, hey, we need to add a little bit at the trade deadline and they want to ship off a player, a prospect or two for anybody other than Luis Robert. I don't need Luis Robert. And we've discussed that before. I think that they can make a run for it. But yeah, there are, I do have a couple of concerns right now, just in general. And I think that the biggest concern that I have right now is Alexis Diaz. When he was a closer over the last few years, it was spectacular. Like the Reds were a bad team, but they knew that if they took a lead into the ninth, Alexis Diaz would shut it down for him. And it has not been the case of late. I know that Alexis Diaz is coming off of an injury. He had a hamstring strain or something like that he suffered in spring training. He's back, but he's not been great. I think I don't think he's had a clean outing to this point. And let me see if I can actually pull it up. Last night was bad. Even before the thumb issues, last night was bad. Okay, his outing against Baltimore in that 8-3 win was a full inning, one strikeout, no base runners. But before that, he gave up a hit and a walk. And before that, he gave up two walks. He's been great for putting guys on base. That's just a thing that he did. The Locked On Reds guys would joke. He's like, just bring Alexis Diaz in and put a ghost runner on first. There was already going to be a base runner. Just throw him on first. He's going to feel more comfortable. Last night, he went 1 1/3. He gave up three hits and walked a guy. He gave up a home run. That was that three-run shot. And then he obviously gave up that massive ground rule double that thankfully didn't come back to bite him. He has not looked like the Alexis Diaz that the Reds expect and does not look like the Alexis Diaz that the Reds need at this point. There are some pitchers in that bullpen that are rock solid. Emilio Pagan, outside of that one outing, has been great. Tony Santion has been fantastic. Graham Ashcraft has been great. Alexis Diaz has not. I don't know if he is still feeling that spring training injury or if it is time to put him out to pasture. But he is super concerning, and it's super disappointing because I liked Alexis Diaz. I liked him coming out of the bullpen. I thought that when they got rid of Raisel Iglesias, Alexis Diaz was just as good. And Raisel Iglesias, I had issues with because he was so frustrating. If he didn't come in a one-run game, he could not close it out. It was the weirdest thing. But when you have your young starter in Nick Lodolo struggling, he didn't look what he was like he was supposed to. He 5 2/3, 99 pitches. You have to pick him up. And Alexis Diaz did not. And super disappointing. But the Reds were 1-10. With runners in scoring position. They should have picked him up when it comes to the lineup as it is. But, you know, I expect it wouldn't surprise me to see some kind of, transaction coming through with Alexis Diaz, just in, like trying to sit him down because of him tearing up his finger. But he just hasn't looked right this year. And it's super disappointing.
Yeah. And excuse me again, I'm still dealing with this, people, but it's been disappointing to see that from Alexis Diaz, especially with what the rest of the bullpen has been able to do this year, because I was looking at it and the starting rotation has an ERA of 3.38, which is fourth in Major League Baseball. And you know, I was kind of expecting the bullpen's ERA to be a bit worse than that, and it's really not. The bullpen's ERA is 3.58, which ranks 10th in Major League Baseball. And so you gotta, talking about Alexis Diaz there, you can put two and two together and see that a lot of that ERA being higher than the starting rotation's ERA is from Alexis Diaz to this point in the year. And of course, other guys have given up runs here and there for the bullpen, but it's certainly sad because he has been a part of the Cincinnati Reds for quite some time, but yeah, it's on the whole, it still hasn't hurt the bullpen, which is good, but it never hurts to improve, and it never hurts to better your team in any way that you can. And if a guy is struggling, especially if now he's hurt, then he should be going on the injured list to give somebody else a chance who can potentially do just that and better the team. And there is, another saving grace for the Cincinnati Reds is the way that they played against a legitimate World Series contender in 2024. And we talked about this ad nauseum, of course, off the podcast, but last year, the Cincinnati Reds went 4-3 against the Philadelphia Phillies. And it's kind of been a trend over the last few years that the Cincinnati Reds have played the Philadelphia Phillies well. The Cincinnati Reds are one of those teams who really steps up their game against much tougher competition. And they stepped it up in a big way last year. And we're not going to see that this year. The first series until we're not going to see that this year until July, which is the first series between the Reds and the Phillies. It's in the first weekend of July. They're all day games in Philadelphia. And then we'll see it again in Cincinnati with another three games in, I already said in Cincinnati. But what's really interesting to me is after that first game in Cincinnati, there is a post-game concert from none other than Snoop D-O-double-G. So my question for you is, Drew, how loud is it going to be at Great American Ballpark with Snoop D-O-double-G in town? And should I make a trip to Cincinnati to see Great American Ballpark and a Snoop Dogg concert in the same night?
In terms of volume, or it'll be something. Those post game concerts are usually pretty rocking. I have no desire to see Snoop Dogg, especially after the beginning of the year. What was going on there? But yeah, no, it's going to be loud. And we ain't talking about the sound of those speakers, are my friends. Speaking to the Reds playing teams well last year, these are the teams that they had winning records against last year: the Atlanta Braves, the Chicago Cubs, the White Sox, the Rockies. They were 3-0 against the Astros, 3-0 against the Angels, 4-3 against the Dodgers, 5-2 against the Fish, 2-1 against the Twins. They swept the Yankees 3-0. Phillies 4-3. Cardinals 7-6. Blue Jays 2-1. How did this team finish with 77 wins when they beat all those? I don't understand. Fire David Bell again. I swear. Swept the Yankees 3-0. Oh my God. Last year was such a roller coaster. It was hilarious. Like, we knew that they would get up for those big matchups. So annoying. It's just annoying.
Yes. Well, it is going to be a better season for the Cincinnati. I believe it'll be a better season for the Cincinnati Reds this year, and I know that you do too, Drew. And it's been exciting so far with what the offense has done, what the pitching staff has been able to do. And if they can continue that over the rest of the 162-game season, then they've got a really good opportunity of finishing better than third in the National League Central, especially with what the rest of the National League Central outside of the Chicago Cubs has shown us to this point in the year. And we're going to see a little bit more today to show us what may happen the rest of the year, because we have a full slate of ball games for your Tuesday, and they're all night games, unfortunately. And the first one is at 6:10 p.m. and it is the Yankees at the Guardians. Will Warren at Tanner Bibee. Both these guys have ERAs above 5. Don't expect Bibee's ERA to be that high, so maybe another Guardians win here over the Yankees. But the Yankees look to move to 15-9. Guardians look to move to 14-9. 30 minutes later, Padres at the Tigers. Nick Pivetta at Jack Flaherty. Perhaps the pitching matchup of the day, at least between these first two games. Padres look to move to 17-7. Tigers look to move to 15-9. Also at 6:40, we got the Cincinnati Reds at the Miami Marlins. Nick Martinez at Edwin Cabrera. Both these guys have ERAs of 6 or higher. Reds look to move back to 500 at 12-12. Marlins look to move to 11-12. How do you see this game going tonight, Drew?
I hope that the Reds can win. Nick Martinez is what he is at this point. He is a fifth starter. I am ready for Rhett Lauder to be healthy, but Goodness gracious. I just need Nick Martinez to somehow pull six innings out and continue to underutilize this bullpen, because the better ones like Tony Santillan and Graham Ashcraft didn't pitch last night, so they should be available. No, the Reds, like I keep saying, this is a weaker stretch, and the Reds need to take a page out of the Mets book and beat up on bad teams. And I just need them to just continue to build on it and at least start another win streak. I am trying to see if they've ever played Edward Cabrera. But yeah, they have played. Last time they played Edward Cabrera, it was in one start last year, and they knocked him out of the game after 3 1/3, after scoring seven earned runs with four home runs. Let's have more of that, please. I would like that very, very much.
Yeah, it looks to be a high scoring ball game up there or down there in Miami. But I do think that the Reds have a good chance of bouncing back into the win column and reaching 500 once again. 5 minutes after that game, Orioles at the Nationals. Dean Kramer takes the mound for the Orioles in that one as they look to move to 10-12, and the Nationals look to move to 10-13. Also at 6:45, Mariners at the Red Sox. Mariners throwing the dreaded TBD, and the Boston Red Sox are getting the season debut of Brian Bello. Mariners look to move to 13-10. Red Sox look to move to 14-11. 25 minutes after that, 7:10 p.m. Eastern, Phillies at the Mets. This game is on national television on TBS as well as the local broadcasts there in Philly and Queens/New York. Philadelphia Phillies throwing Christopher Sanchez, their second best pitcher so far this year, and the Mets are throwing Griffin Canning. Phillies look to move to 14-10. Mets will be falling to 16-8. 7:15 p.m. Eastern, Cardinals at the Braves. Cardinals throwing Pallante, and Atlanta throwing the dreaded TBD because Spencer Strider was supposed to start in this game, and now he is not. Both teams look to reach their 10th win of the year. Another 25 minutes later, 7:40 p.m. Eastern, Rockies at the Royals. Chris Bubich takes the mound for the Kansas City Royals and puts his 1.88 ERA on the line. Luckily for him, they are not in Colorado. Rockies look to move to 5-17. Royals look to get their 10th win of the year and move to 10-14. Also at 7:40 p.m. Eastern, the Dodgers at the Cubs. Another one of these fantastic midweek series that we have to look forward to. And this one will be Dustin May at Shota Imanaga. Very good pitching matchup in this one. Dodgers look to move to 17-7, while the Cubs look to move to 15-10. Also at 7:40 p.m. Eastern, the White Sox at the Twins. White Sox look to move to 6-17. Twins look to move to 8-15. 30 minutes later, at 8:10 p.m. Eastern, Blue Jays at the Astros. Chris Bassett at Ronel Blanco. Bassett puts his sub-1 ERA on the line against the Houston Astros as the Blue Jays look to move to 13-11 and the Astros look to move to 12-11. Hour and a half roughly later, 9:38 p.m. Eastern, Pirates at the Angels. Pirates look to move to 9-15. Angels look to move to 12-10. 2 minutes later, 9:40 p.m. Eastern, Rays at the Diamondbacks. Rays look to move to 10-13. Diamondbacks look to move to 14-9. 5 minutes later, Brewers at the Giants. Brewers look to move to 13-11 behind Jose Quintana and his sub-1 ERA, while the Giants look to move to 16-8 behind Jordan Hicks and his above-6 ERA. And 20 minutes later, to close out the night, the Texas Rangers at the Sacramento Athletics. Rangers look to move to 14-9, while the Athletics look to move to 11-12. And Patrick Corbin continues to show that he is not the worst pitcher in baseball. And he has a 3.86 ERA going into tonight, while one of Gru's minions, Beto, has a 2.61 ERA. Any final thoughts on our slate of games today, Drew?
Dodgers-Cubbies will be a good one. That matchup, that pitching matchup, May versus Imanaga, two teams that Major League Baseball loves. You know, the Dodgers are Major League Baseball's favorite team, and everybody who makes these power rankings. It's going to be a good one. This will be a good series, and this is why the Reds need to stack up wins against bad teams. The Cubs are playing good competition. Every time the Cubs lose and the Reds win, It's huge. Come on. Let's go, Dodgers.
That is this is a family show, Drews. If I don't know if you can say that kind of those kind, that kind of language here on the show.
We can bleep it out in post. We'll be all right.
Yes, it's going to be a fun day. There are some good matchups today. I'm very much looking forward to tonight's slate of ball games. As I die. But yeah, thank you for joining us here on the First Pitch Podcast today. Your daily source of baseball talk. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on the notification icon so you can be notified when more episodes just like this go live. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star rating, share the show with your friends, let them know where they can get their daily source of baseball talk at firstpitchpodcast.com. Check out the First Pitch newsletter. Link for that is in the description. It is free to subscribe and get that in your email inbox every single weekday morning, though we do appreciate any and all paid subscribers as they help keep the bills on around here. As a reminder, there will be no podcast this week on Friday. I do plan on having a newsletter on Friday still. Monday, there will not be a newsletter because I will be getting back late Sunday night. And yeah, but until next time, this has been First Pitch.